Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribara Dhani Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribara Dhani Jaya Sodhanandana Vajjana Ranjana Yasodhanandana Vajjana Ranjana Jamuna Thira Banachari Jamuna Tira Bane Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya
Jai Om Vishwapad Paramahamsa Parivraj Dura Sisama Devashaninda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Chaya Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Devotee Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Nama Chaya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Shri Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shri Basari Gaur Bhakti Vinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Marva Gokavinat Shama Kunda Radha Kunda, Giri Govardhana Ki Jai, Sivindama Simaturdham Ki Jai, Shri Navadip Simai Bodham Ki Jai, Shri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai, Gangamahi Chamonamahi Ki Jai, Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Sangha Veda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. Glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Glories to Sri Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, this morning we're reading from Sri Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 13, entitled Description of the Future Manners, Text 14 through 36. And then we're going to read from Chapter 14, text 1 to 4, entitled Universal System of Universal Management. This is the shloka is in the next, because there's no purports in this. This first section we're reading. Maybe I'll just do that first, then we can read the shloka to the next one. There's only two purports in this whole chapter. Did we chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So the text 14, description of the future manus. I guess because they're all coming in the future, they haven't come as yet, so there's not much to write about, because like when King Prithu was coronated, all the professional reciters came. And it was glorifying him like anything. He says, wait till I've done something before you glorify me. I haven't done anything yet. I've just been installed. So I guess because there's nothing, they haven't appeared yet, there's not so much to say. Therefore, not much purport on it. Just see a historical narration of the future manus. Previous manus have already been described in this 8th, in this canto, I think most of them. Verse 6. So it will give us a peep into the future. Of course, millions of years, but not really going to help us much, I mean, in the future, because we won't know who we're going to be in the future. We'll forget about our bodies in the Kali Yuga of 2000 and so. But forgive us some food for thought now. It is there for a purpose, apart from authenticating the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's there to broaden our minds, make us realize how small we are. Text 14. It's continuing from 13, talking about Bali. With great affection, the personality of Godhead bound Bali and then installed him in the kingdom of Suttala, which is more opulent than the heavenly planets. Bali Maharaj now resides on that planet and is more comfortably situated than Indra. Bali is doing okay. Still there. O King, during the 8th Manvantara, the great personalities, Galava, Diptimam, Parushama, Aswatthama, Kripacharya, Rishishringa, and our father Vyasadev, the incarnation of Narayan, will be the 7 sages. For the present, they're all residing in their respective ashrams. I don't know if they live that long. Some may. They're great rishis, higher living entities. Otherwise, they take birth again and take the position of the 7 rishis. Every manvantara, they have the rishis. They have the demigods all change position. The rishis all change position. And the manus also change position every day of Brahma. In the 8th Manvantara, the greatly powerful personality of Godhead, Sarvabhauma, will take birth. His father will be Devaguya. His mother will be Saraswati. He will take the kingdom away from Puranda, Lord Indra, and give it to Bali Maharaj. O King, in this one, we read, or we're still coming up. Bali. Bali conquers the heavenly planets. It's just coming up in the next few chapters. And they call Vishnu, and Vishnu cheats Bali, appearing as Vamandev, and takes him down to Patal, because when Vaman came, Sukacharya knew that was Vishnu. Sukacharya is the guru of the demons. So he told Bali, don't do it. Don't give him, it's Vishnu. He said, but I've already given my word. I come from a great dynasty. He said, don't do it. There's occasions when you can retract your word, you can tell a lie. When it's a dangerous situation to save others and for other reasons, it's okay, you can tell. He said, no, I can't, I give it. He said, if you disobey my order, you'll have to go to hell, I'm your guru. But anyway, he said, well, we know that the actual Vishnu is the supreme person, and we should actually surrender unto him. He's the Lord, he's in charge of everything, we should follow him. So he did. He surrendered to Vamandev, Vishnu, with great pleasure. And by that act, he was very pleased. The Lord was very pleased. And so I had to keep intact the word of Sukacharya that you'll have to go to hell because he's a Brahmana. So he sent him down to the lower regions, but not the Patala region, the hellish. It was the subterranean heavenly planets, Atala, Vitala, Mahatala, Talatala, Sutala, all those ones. There's no sunshine, they're in the ground, within the earth. But there's no fear because there's no sun, there's no fear of time because there's no rising of the sun and setting of the sun. So they live quite happily there. There's not much danger for them. And it says it's better than here. It said it'd be better than Indraloka, if you're in the mode of passion, that is. Very, very sensuous, eh? You can enjoy very nicely. But because he surrendered to Vamandev, then he got that desire fulfilled to take the position of Indra in the next Manvantara. So he got two benefits. By surrendering to Krishna, you get the greatest benefits. He became the king of Sutala in this lifetime. He's there now, and he's enjoying like anything. And next one, he gets the post of Indra. So it's ironical, the Lord appears, cheats Bali, takes Bali away from the position he's usurped illegally, puts Indra back, and then the next Manvantara, he's going to take Indra out and put Bali back, put Bali there. Hare Krishna. Material world key. Takes a long time in between. O King, the ninth Manu will be Daksha Sarani, who is born of Varuna. Among his sons will be Bhutaketu and Dipaketu. In this ninth Manvantara, the Paras and Marichi Garbhas will be among the demigods. The King of Heaven will be named Abhuta, and Dyutiman will be among the seven sages. 19, 21. Vrishabhadev, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will take birth from his father, Ayushman, and his mother, Ambudhara. He will enable the Indra, named Adbhuta, to enjoy the opulence of the three worlds. 21. The son of Upashloka, known as Brahma Savarni, will be the tenth Manu. Urishena will be among his sons, and the Brahmanas, headed by Havishman, will be the seven sages. Small Bhagavatam, not very big words. I'll get some technology. Havisham, Sukrita, Satya, Jayamurti, and others will be the seven sages. The Suvasanas and the Virudhas will be among the demigods, and Shambhu will be the king Indra. In the home of Vivashrashta, a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear from the womb of Visuchi as the incarnation known as Vishvakshena. He will make friends with Shambhu. 24. In the 11th Manvanta, the Manu will be Dharma Sarvini, who will be extremely learned in spiritual knowledge. From him there will come 10 sons headed by Satyadharma. 25. The Vighangamas and Kamagamas, Nirvana Ruchis and others will be the demigods. The king of the demigods, Indra, will be Vaidhrita, and the seven sages will be headed by Aruna. 26. The son of Arakya, known as Dharmashetu, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will appear from the womb of Vaidhrita, the wife of Arakya, and will rule the three worlds. 27. O king, the 12th Manu will be named Ruja Sarvani. Devan, Upendra, and Devashrestha will be among his sons. 28. In this Manvantara, the name of Indra will be Ritadharma, and the demigods will be headed by the Haritas. Among the sages will be Tapomurti, Tapasvi, and Agnitraka. 29. From the mother named Sunrita and the father named Satyasaha will come Swadharma, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He will rule that Manvanta. The 13th Manu will be named Deva Sarvani, and he will be very advanced in spiritual knowledge. Among his sons will be Chitrasena and Vichitra. 31. In the 13th Manvanta, the Sukamas and Sutramas will be among the demigods. Divyaspati will be the king of heaven, and Nirmoka and Tatvadarsha will be among the seven sages. 32. The son of Devahota, known as Yogeshwara, will appear as a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His mother's name will be Brihati. He will perform activities for the welfare of Divyaspati. The name of the 14th Manu will be Indra Savarni. He will have sons like Uru, Gambira, and Buddha. The Pavitras and the Chakshus, 2034. The Pavitras, Chakshushas will be among the demigods, and Suchi will be Indra, the king of heaven. Agni, Bahu, Suchi, Sudha, Magadha, and others of great austerity will be the seven sages. O king, in the 14th Manvantara, Supreme Personality of Godhead will appear from the womb of Vitana, and his father's name will be Satrayana. This incarnation will be celebrated as Brihadbhanu, and he will administer spiritual activities. 36. O king, I have now described to you the 14 Manus appearing in the past, present, and future. The total duration of time ruled by these Manus is 1,000 yuga cycles. This is called a kalpa, or one day of Brahma. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Description of the Future Manus. So we see everything is in a little summary of the chapter, that everything is already arranged by the Lord in the future. Who will be the Manu? They use the names of the Manus because Manu indicates a huge period of time, right? They come every kalpa, day of Brahma, every 1,000 cycles is like 4,300,000,000 years, you know. And it's already planned in the future. Who's going to be after 4,300,000,000 years? Who's going to come next? This is management. Huh? This is Krishna's management. And this goes on 14 times. It's already planned. Who will be the Indra? Who will be the sages? Huh? The Saptarishis, who will take that position? who would take the position of Indra, and all, I guess all the other demigods also, who would take their places, are already fixed. Yet there's a great struggle going on, right, between the devas and the asuras, and you see there's always a conflict. There's so many conflicts in the Bhagavatam, and how they got resolved. So this is what we're learning, how to resolve the conflict. The conflict is the spirit soul is in the material world. That's the conflict. We don't belong in the material world. We're eternal, and the material world is temporary, and we're trying to adjust into a comfortable situation in something that is constantly changing. Doesn't work. So this is an incompatible situation, as well was said. So everyone is trying to exploit the resources of material nature and only become entangled by her complexities. Srila Prabhupada's purport to the Hare, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. That we try to manipulate the material energy for our betterment, because we're suffering in the material world. Nobody is peaceful in the material world. Everyone wants a better situation, isn't it? So everyone is trying to adjust materially for their future. This is what we're doing, right? Purpose of material existence, or any existence actually, is enjoyment. So, but in the material world, then enjoyment comes through the senses. I am this body, I experience. So then the sense gratification becomes the most important thing. That becomes the goal of life. Right? That's what we're taught. That's what everyone is teaching us, right? So our scientists are inventing new things so we can enjoy more, and the politicians are backing them up, supporting them, and the university is teaching us the same thing. If you get this degrees, these figures, letters behind your name, then you can enjoy more in the future. That's what they're selling. Then you get a better job, more money, more money. So in other words, enjoyment comes from facility, things. It's illusion, maya. But that's what we're being sold. And that's what everyone believes in the world. That's the way the material world is going, every country. No one is exempt, practically. So that is the problem of the material creation, and why there's a need of material creation is that we won't give up this desire to improve the future. We think happiness comes from facility, and if someone's got more facility than I have, then hey, I should have that, because I want to be the most happy. So therefore there's always conflict, and everyone is different according to the modes of nature that you're born under. Everyone is different. So how can there actually be peace in such a place? Everyone is different, everyone is individual, and everyone is plying or struggling for the top position. How can there be peace in such a place? Everyone would like to be on top, right? We'd all like to be number one, the center of attention, the greatest in everything. Naturally, opulences are attractive. There's six opulences that Krishna has in full. But because we've forgotten Krishna, then hey, let me take that position. And this is the mentality of the conditioned souls in the material world. It's a very sad situation. But that's illusion, that's maya. And Prahlad tells us in the previous, we read the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. People are making so many arrangements for their happiness, and so many arrangements to stop the problems, but still the problems come, and they don't always get the happiness. So he said that the happiness and distress is already fixed according to karma. Just like these, who's going to be the next Indra? Who's going to be the next Manu? It's already fixed. It means that living entity, his enjoyment duration of life is already fixed. So similarly, every living entity is in the same situation, where the living entity is in the material world, and then we're taking birth, and we're, what happens then, we're going through life, we're traveling through this cosmic manifestation, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, experiencing happiness and distress in different species of life, perceiving through our different senses, whichever particular body we got. That's the material life. That's all it is. The soul is bewildered by karma. He's forced to experience the results of his past, so he's going to experience some things he's going to like, some things he's not going to like. So that's all that's going on. The soul is going through this myriad of atoms, time, space, colors, in different forms, and he's attracted to this, and he's afraid of this. Something, because he's experiencing happiness and distress. So he's trying to get away from the happiness, trying to protect himself from the distress. But how can you do that? You have no control. We're all bound up by these modes of material nature. It's very powerful. We're tiny, 1/10,000th part of the tip of the hair. But our consciousness is manifested through these big bodies. But still we're tiny in comparison to the whole cosmic manifestation. So, and the joke is that however so-called successful you are, whatever facility you have, you're not going to get any more happiness than what is due to us. We're going to get the happiness, which is a result of our previous pious activities, we have that much. And we have the distress of our previous impious activities, which is that much. And we can't change that. Krishna can. We can't do it. How can we change it? So you've got to go through those, unless you surrender to Krishna, that is. You've got to go through this samsara. You've got to go through this wear off that karma. But in the meantime, you're creating more karma. So therefore, you come back again. This is the wheel of samsara. How to get out of this? Very, very puzzling. So very tricky. So Krishna says, you surrender to me. That's the only way out. if you engage your transcendental senses in the transcendental service of the Lord, then you'll experience transcendental pleasure. That's actual freedom. That's real life. So that's what we're being offered right now. So we're given all these great histories, and nobody's happy. They're happy for a little while. When they get the post of Indra, they're happy. But when they're out, they're unhappy. And what's he going to be? What will Indra be in his next birth? In next situation? Bali will know he's going to be Indra. After that, what will he be? any case, they're still in the material world. And they're still changing body to body. Experience happiness and distress. So what is the... It's crazy. What is it? So unless you accept there's a controller and there's, you know, design, it's obviously there's, you know, intelligent design behind the whole thing. But what is the purpose of it all? This is what we should understand. What is the purpose of it all? Once we know what's going on, what is the purpose of it? It's to bring us to this understanding of there's no purpose to the material world. Except to wake us up and say, hey, I don't belong here. Where do I belong? And then the information is there because the Lord comes. The man who say give the religious principles. The Lord comes. He keeps coming all the time also to give us this information. Until ultimately we can surrender to Krishna and don't bother with the material energy. That's the only solution. There's no material solution to the material problem. Okay. We go to then the next chapter. He has to read all these shlokas. Then the next chapter 14, Canto 8. It's called the System of Universal Management. I read the. Srila Prabhupada says, this chapter describes the duties allotted to Manu by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the Manus, as well as their sons, the sages, the demigods, and the Indras, acts under the orders of various incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the end of every Chatur Yuga, consisting of Satya Dwapara, Treta and Kali Yugas, the sages, acting under the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, distribute the Vedic knowledge and thus reinstate eternal religious principles. Manu's duty is to re-establish the system of religion. Manu's sons execute Manu's orders, and thus the entire universe is maintained by Manu and his descendants. The Indras are various rulers of the heavenly planets. Assisted by the demigods, they rule the three worlds. The Supreme Personality of Godhead also appears as incarnations in different yugas. He appears as Sanaka, Sanatan, Yajnavalkya, Dattatreya, and others, and thus he gives instructions in spiritual knowledge, prescribed duties, principles of mystic yoga, and so on. As Marichi and others, he creates progeny. As the king, he punishes the miscreants, and in the form of time, annihilates the creation. One may argue, if the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead can do anything simply by his will, why has he arranged for so many personalities to manage? How and why he does this cannot be understood by those who are under the clutches of Maya. Stay tuned. Those of us who are under the clutches of Maya, because they're going to give us some understanding of why the Lord does this. Why, you hear that a lot, right? When there's a catastrophe, why God allows this to happen, why, you know, if I was God, I would do it like this. So text 1, translation, Maharaj Parikshit inquired, O most opulent Sukadeva Goswami, please explain to me how Manu and the others in East Manvantara are engaged in their respective duties and by whose order they are so engaged. So Maharaj Parikshit is asking Sukadeva Goswami to explain these Manvantaras in the future and how they will be engaged. Very very high question, and Sukadeva is going to answer. So Sukadeva Goswami says, the Manus, the sons of Manu, the great sages, the Indras, and all the demigods, O king, are appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his various incarnations, such as Yajna. Text 3. O king, I have already described to you various incarnations of the Lord, such as Yajna, the Manus and others are chosen by these incarnations, under whose direction they conduct universal affairs. There's a little purple there. The Manus execute the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his various incarnations. The text 4. Chatur Yugante Kalena Grastam Trutikanam Yatan Tapasarishaiho Pasyan Yatho Dharma Sanatana. Chatur Yuga Ante. At the end of every four yugas, Satya Dwapara, Treta and Kali. Kalina, in due course of time, Grastan, lost. Shruti Ganan, the Vedic instruction. Yatha, as tapasa, by austerity, rishaya, great saintly persons, apasyan, by seeing misuse, yataha, where from, dharma, occupational duties, sanatana, eternal. Translation, at the end of every four yugas, the great saintly persons, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, re-establish the principles of religion. Prabhupada, by divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Prabhupada Ki Jai. In this verse, the words Dhamma and Sanatana are very important. Sanatana means internal and Dharma means occupational duties. From Satya Yuga to Kali Yuga, the principles of religion and occupational duty gradually deteriorate. In Satya Yuga, the religious principles are observed in full, without deviation. In Treta Yuga, however, these principles are somewhat neglected and only 3/4 of religious duties continue. In Dwapara Yuga, only half the religious principles continue. And in Kali Yuga, only 1/4 of the religious principles which gradually disappear. At the end of Kali Yuga, the principles of religion or the occupational duties of humanity are almost lost. Indeed, in this Kali Yuga we have passed through only 5,000 years. Yet, the decline of Sanatana Dharma is very prominent. The duty of saintly persons, therefore, is to take up seriously the cause of Sanatana Dharma and try to re-establish it for the benefit of the entire human society. The Krishna Consciousness Movement has been started according to this principle, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.51 Kale dosha nidhira jan astihe ko mahan guna kirtana riva krishna sya mukta sangha param vrajyat. The entire Kali Yuga is full of faults. It is like an unlimited ocean of faults. But the Krishna Consciousness Movement is very authorized. Therefore, following the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who 500 years ago inaugurated the movement of Sankirtan, Krishna Kirtan, we are trying to introduce this movement according to superior orders all over the world. Now, if the inaugurators of this movement strictly follow the regulative principles and spread this movement for the benefit of all human society, they will certainly usher in a new way of life by re-establishing Sanatana Dharma, the eternal occupational duties of humanity. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. Jiva Sarupaya, Krishna Nityadas. This is the purport of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana means Nitya, or eternal, and Krishna Dasa means servant of Krishna. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. This is the sum and substance of the Krishna Consciousness Movement and the purport. So at the end of every four yugas, at the end of Kali Yuga, when the religious practices have really declined, then the Satya Yuga starts again. And so then the sages, they gather together, and they re-establish the principles of religion. Then they would start the process of the process would be meditation at that time in Satya Yuga. Because the end of Kali Yuga, if it gets so bad, people are running around this big. Don't come back. This big. Nothing to eat. Prabhupada said no fruits, no vegetables, no sugar, no grains, no milk. What will you eat? And everything gets smaller, smaller, smaller. So then the size of the people and no religious principles become like law of the jungle, because animal life. So there's no and dharmas, there's hardly any devotees. I mean, not so many now. Practice, how many people on the planet practice in Sanatana Dharma? So this is one 1/4 of what was in Kali Yuga. One-fourth is not so much. And here, you see on this planet, and that means everywhere except in the higher planets, they're all above Swargaloka, everyone's on their way back to Godhead, so we're not including those, but who's actually practicing Sanatana Dharma? Practically speaking. It's only the Vaishnavas, because these other religious systems, they're not really Sanatana Dharma. Right? Their goal is to go to the heavenly planets, the modern religions. They go to the heavenly planets to enjoy nicely. So it's not Sanatana, they're not eternal Dharma, they're not actually going there for the Lord's pleasure, which is... And the other impersonalists or voidist philosophies, they're also not Sanatana, because the soul is a person, the Lord is a person, there's an eternal relationship there. So even if you attain this state of nirvana or mukti, it's unnatural. It's not eternal. So therefore you have to change it in. So out of all the religious people, how many people are actually practicing Sanatana Dharma? It's not a lot. And we're... So it's not even 1/4 of the people. 1/4 is 2 billion. It's not even 2 billion. It's not even 1/8. It's not even 1/16. I wouldn't... Someone may do the history. I don't know. Someone told me we have 9 million congregation. Very well. ISKCON, keep... Good. 9 million congregation. Oh, we're up there. Anyway, by Srila Prabhupada's grace, he's pushing up the Sanatana Dharma figures as it's supposed to be. So then again, then Kalki comes and kills everyone, all the non-devotees. So then all that's left on the planet is devotees. Not so many, but... So then they're performing Sanatana Dharma. It means they're performing all their proper religious process. By that, the Lord is satisfied, all the demigods are satisfied, everything starts to flourish again. Right? The vegetation, the food, the vegetables, they flourish, the minerals, they come, the weather's nice, everything's perfect. living for 100,000 years, very nice body. Don't have to work. You throw the seed on the ground and it grows. You don't have to plow it. You don't have to watch. It rains at night time. It's nice during the day. Very nice. And you live for 100,000 years. And then gradually it degrades. That's the that's a program of the Lord. And it goes down to Kali Yuga. And again, then it's all gone and the sages all come together and they reestablish the principles of religion. And then every age that the Lord Himself comes and reestablishes the Yuga Dharma for that particular Yuga. So why bother with all this? Mom may ask. Why the Lord takes so much trouble, all this administration, and it's always the same thing. It always degrades. It's the physics of the place. Then he comes again, kills and starts. Okay, let's start again. You wash your hands, start again, afresh. Yeah, everything's great. Then, due course of time, Treta Yuga comes, yeah. Then Dwapara Yuga, then Kali, then again, okay, start again. Material world, this is how the material world is. So what fool would try to find a permanent situation to be comfortable in this material world? So no matter how great duration of life you have, like a Manu or a Brahma, it's the same old thing. It's the same thing. Just trying to resolve problems. Just trying to improve the situation for yourself. And if you're more comfortable than others, but that's all that's going on. Living entity is not supposed to be here. The soul, the spirit soul, is not supposed to be in matter. It's struggling. It's suffocating in here. And all this upadhammas, this act pious activities and sub religious principles. They're trying to you know. As Prabhupada says, blow on the boil. You got to boil very hot. You blow on it. No, you got to cut it. That hurts. But you, this is what the religions are doing. Upadharma, which is not Sanatana Dharma. They're just trying to adjust the material. They're going to God to adjust the situation in the material world to make a better situation for them. Right? That's what they're after. That's the goal. The goal is happiness, yeah? Goal is to be happy. And we can't be happy if there's problems. So we go to God to remove the problems. You remove these problems or you take me to a place where there's no problems. This is our main prayers, right? And you go to that's what everyone's praying for. And help my family, you know. Any sickness comes, take it away. And short of money, you know. And some problem over here, you please resolve this issue. Give me that. Trying to, using the Lord, the only thing they believe in the Lord, but they're using him to adjust the material situation. And he'll do it. Look what he's done for Bali. He puts Bali, he makes Bali a ninja. That's what he wanted. But he's not back to Godhead. He's not in the spiritual world enjoying the life of Sachit Ananda. He's here. Even a relatively comfortable situation like the Devadar, they can't stay there. They've got to go. And who knows what's going to happen next. So it's very, very mysterious. Bhagavatam answers all these questions, otherwise very puzzling. Right? Very puzzling. Why the Lord acts in such... Why the Lord allows so much suffering? Why good, bad things happen to good people? All these questions they can't answer. People can't answer. So, yeah, that's it. So the eternal religious principle, so this, the Yuga Dharma now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to say it is this Sankirtan movement. It's very easy because we're very fallen. It's quite degraded. The world is quite degraded today. And as Prabhupada mentions, we're only 5,000 years. I mean, another 400,000 to go. You can't imagine, huh? What it'll be like. I can't. I think there must become, you know, some world wars or some other holocaust, something will happen, the whole society crumbles, everyone gets down on their knees and says, God help us. And then they start again, they go back to the basics and then start again. Because how can it degrade for another 400,000 years? Only 5,000 years, look how degraded it is. How can it go more and more degraded for 400,000 years? I think there had to be some, you know, the whole thing is gone, you start again, then everyone becomes pious. When everything's taken away, then there's no resource but to turn to God. God help us. Then they become pious again. And then when you get affluent, then you don't need God anymore, right? You've got plenty, and then you forget about God. Things are going well, then you don't worry about God. Generally, the four kinds of people that surrender to Krishna, most of those are the ones who the those in distress, those in want of something. They're the majority of people. So everyone's going to God because they want something. Even the transcendentalists, they want knowledge or the inquisitive. But nobody is actually going for the Lord's pleasure. Everyone's thinking their own pleasure. So this is a great mystery. Why should we give the Lord pleasure? He's already said it. He's already Atmarama. the Kali Bhakta. He prays to Kali. Devi, please, you help me. You resolve this problem, I will give you a nice goat. Of course, she doesn't take, but she gives to her followers, they take. So she fulfills his desire, and he doesn't offer the goat. So she says, where's my goat, you promised? Well, time's a little tough now, you can... So she said, well, at least offer a chicken. Oh, well, there's any problems, isn't it? So she said, got this, at least offer a fly. And he said, Goddess, Devi, he said, there's so many flies buzzing around you, why didn't you just snatch one? You got 10 hands. So, God, why should we look for God's happiness? He can do anything, he's full of happiness. It's a mystery. It's a mystery. But this is the constitution of the living entity, is to act for the Lord's happiness. Then there's perfect union. He's perfectly happy. We're perfectly happy because we're doing the perfect thing. We're acting for the Lord's happiness. He's expanded himself into us for his pleasure, to increase his pleasure. So we're part of the Lord's pleasure potency. And when we're giving him pleasure, acting, giving him pleasure, happily giving him pleasure, like Bali happily surrendered, then the Lord, then that's perfection. That is your perfection in life. So it's beyond the sense of duty. I have to do it because if I don't serve God, I may suffer. I may have to go down to hell. It's not a sense of duty. It's a sense of that's best. It's the second best. But it's what we want to come to the platform where we actually you're doing it for the pleasure of Krishna. So you have to come to the platform of loving Krishna. Otherwise, why would you take pleasure in serving someone if you didn't love them? I mean, even if you want getting some benefit, if you'd be serving them, but you wouldn't be serving them with love if you didn't love them. You'd be serving them for the benefit. But if there's love there, you'll get the benefit will naturally be there, whatever you want, because the Lord knows our desires, and He likes to fill the desires. If you fulfill the desires of Bali, even though it's a material desire, fulfill desires of Dhruva, even though it's a material desire, He likes to serve His devotees. So, Srimad Bhagavatam has given us the big picture of the whole universal, all universal affairs. And it reduces it down to, you know, what's the point of all this whole thing, you know? All these years. And all this manvantaras and the day of Brahma, that's one breath of Vishnu. That all happens during this period. And when it's all gone again. That's time. That's time management. We can't much time. So it's all the whole thing is relative. But you know, for us the experience is real. You know, this 100 years is so long, and it's all in all. It's so important. 100 years, 100 earth years is nothing. Our lifespan is 3 months of the demigods. They're laughing at us. These human beings are wiggling around. They're useless. When you're born, you immediately grow up to youth. No problems. No crying, changing nappies, and can't useless. Babies are useless till they're three years old. Can't do anything. Right? Then 12 years old, 13, they can start to look after themselves. 13 years. You know, it's a long, big slab of your life. Useless. The demigods, if you're born on the heavenly planets, you immediately grow up to a youth. Nice body, nice fragrance, smart, lot of ability. Who'd want to be a human being? Yuck. A couple of weeks wiggling around like that, then a few more weeks you have to go for education, study, then you have to go to work, and it's so hellish condition you're working in, and then you start, the body, after a couple of weeks, months, your body starts to bend over, and then you're suffering like anything for another couple of months. Who want to go there for 3 months and do all that? That's how they see it. Who'd want to be a human being? But we think it's great, right? 100 years, long time, you know, time changing. Work hard. So everything is just relative. So Bhagavatam is condensing it all. See the big picture, what's going on. So whether you're a Manu or an Indra Gopa, it's all the same thing. No one is satisfied. And everyone's trying to improve their situation. That's what the material world is for. That we get frustrated, banging our head, trying to be satisfied. We can't get it. So then, in the end, you have to throw your hands up and say, God, help me. Okay, now you're talking. Okay, I'd send my devotee. So then he brings his devotee in front of us, and then, Hari Bol. And the devotee says, and nowadays the devotee says, chant Hare Krishna. So immediately you get that. Hari Bol, Prabhu. Hari Bol, my dear friend. You know you're not that body, you're the spirit soul, you're the eternal servant of Krishna. And you should be engaged in his service. Huh? Come to the kitchen and wash some pots. Abhideya, Sambandha, Payojana, new bhakta, first day. Ecstasy. Sankirtan mission is like that. It's made for very fallen people. So it's very simple. It's very simple to execute. Very joyful. Joyfully performed, Nityananda says. Very simple, because we can't take anything complicated. Sankirtan Yagi Ki Sarvopada Ki Jai. इसकम भक्त वृंद की श्रीमद् भागवताम की जय। ताई गो प्रेम नंदी हरे हरे कृष्ण। थैंक यू। Okay, it's 9 o'clock. Oh, those who wish to leave, we'll take one question.
Hare Krishna. So please, I wish you offer some clarity about this very concept. Here you saying life is prefixed. Chapter 13 of 8th canto is talking about creation of the future manas. Some speakers of Bhagavatam says destiny is in a hand to design.
How to?
And some says life is prefix. That life is pre-programmed based on the result of our past karma.
Mm.
So what is our expectation in life really based on? Are we living on a pre-program, or we're living by our conscious endeavors in our day-to-day life?
Predestiny or free will? This is a question. Free will or destiny? One Swami gave a smart answer. He said both. He says just like your body, you grow. Your destiny is to grow to a certain height. You can't change that. But wider, you can change. That's free will. He wasn't one of our swamis. He's a smart one. No, you. the thing is, from the from our point of view, materially we can't change the destiny. But still, you. It's not. We're not on the platform of, you know, Rishabhdev or the Avadhut who are perfectly realized, and they realize there's nothing to do in the world. There's no need to endeavor for anything, because it's going to come automatically. Your happiness has to come, even if you don't endeavor for it. Distress comes. We don't endeavor. Distress comes. So those who actually realize, perfectly realize, then they don't bother about it. There's no need to bother for happiness and distress. There's no need to work for happiness and distress. Prahlad says, the moment you endeavor for happiness, then your problems begin. Because endeavor means work, time, space, and all the problems in between. But we can't do that. You and I can't do that. Just sit there and tolerate everything. No, we have to endeavor to defend ourselves. Our understanding is that whatever situation is, we've caused the situation. You're the cause of that, of you being in that particular body, and the cause of being in this body, right? According to our previous activities. So and the concomitant happiness and distress, which is a package which goes with the lifetime. With so many heartbeats, you have so much happiness and so much distress in that time. That you materially you can't change it. So we're not really concerned about that. There's our saints are saying, you know, let me suffer my lot due to my own impious activities. I have to suffer. Let me suffer. Whatever it is, but don't let me stop service to you. So let me do the service and just tolerate the happiness and tolerate the distress when it comes. In the material world, the happiness and the focus of happiness and distress is everything. It's everything. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, that's everything. So how to do that nicely? This is a materialistic dream. So, because my happiness is the most important thing, is the goal. So therefore, Distress is a big issue, and happiness is a big issue. They're the two issues, only two issues. How to resolve that. But for the devotee, no, the issue is, the real issue is we've forgotten Krishna, we should be serving Krishna. So then you focus on Krishna, and the goal is to serve Krishna 24/7. And then develop the proper consciousness later on. But right now, you can actually engage your senses, physically engage your senses in Vaidisana. You can actually serve Krishna 24 hours a day. This is what ISKCON is offering, a chance for us to engage our senses 24 hours a day in the service of Krishna. That's what ISKCON is offering us. Then the consciousness has to be purified, and the reasons why we're doing it have to be purified. That we're doing it for Krishna's pleasure. And then all the happiness and distress, we tolerate them. As far as possible, we tolerate. So Prabhupada said, spiritual life means reducing eating, sleeping, mating, defending. It means not simply being overly concerned. You have to, what's necessary, but not extra. Because the material world is everything's extra. It's not sleeping, it's where you sleep. What kind of bed you sleep in? What kind of mattress you have? What kind of apartment your room is? It's all the externals. It's all increasing that. It's not what you eat. It's where you eat it and what you eat and what restaurant and how much you pay for it. These are all preservation, but they're turning those things into enjoyment. How to enjoy these things? You have to have them. They're life sustainers. Eating, sleeping, enjoying, at least eating, enjoying, eating, sleeping, and defending, they're major issues. But they're turning these into pleasurable aspects because there's no other goal in life. So don't just eat like this, wonderfully. Don't just sleep in a gorgeous. Don't just defend, use atomic weapons. Develop that. So that's a material consciousness. That's all they're concerned about. And when you're peaceful, then you can enjoy how you like. Especially if there's no God, if there's no rules, then you can enjoy exactly how you want. It's convenient to put God on the back burner. You know, we don't mind you people being religious, but don't interfere, don't push your views. You know, you're peacefully, you do your godliness wherever you want to do it. Don't interfere with our secular society and... We'll manage that. We have no problem if you keep to yourself and don't make any disturbance. So they don't want. That's what they want, you see. But for the devotee, we have to. The stress is going to come. The happiness is going to come. But you tolerate that. Tolerate both. Krishna says that the person who is not disturbed when there's reverses and not elated when there's happiness, he's a sage. It's because he understands it's just the modes of nature working. The modes of nature you're bringing your happiness, the modes of nature you're bringing your... So if you concentrate on that, then you're focusing on Maya. You're focusing on the modes of nature. That's Maya. So rather, you have to tolerate that. The karma is they focus on Maya, how to enjoy Maya. The jnana is they focus on Maya, how to control Maya. They're both in Maya. The object, the subject is Maya. How to be free from Maya, how to control Maya. But the bhakta, he becomes indifferent to Maya. Sorry, I got something better, more important to do than deal with you. Don't mind. That's a. So you have your free will, but you use your free will in being indifferent to Maya, or ignoring Maya, neglecting Maya, and serving Krishna. But that's your destiny. It's going to come anyway, unless Krishna intervenes. That happiness, you can't, and distress, we can't stop. We can't do anything about that. Krishna can. And he does. Because what is the purpose of suffering in the material world? You know? Purpose? What is the lesson we learn from suffering?
Come again. I didn't get you.
What is the lesson we learn from suffering? There's so much suffering in the world. What is it for? There's a lesson to be learned, yeah? You're not meant to be here. One. Huh? Become detached. Yeah. So, but why do you want to become detached? They won't suffer. Why are we not supposed to be here? Where are we supposed to be? Yes. So this is what we learn from that. So the devotees understood that. We know we're not supposed to be here. We know we're supposed to not be attached. We know we're supposed to be serving Krishna. Right? We know that, right? Yes?
No, answer question.
Yes? You know that? Do you know that? We're not supposed to be in the material world. We're not supposed to be attached to Maya. We're supposed to be attached to Krishna and working towards Krishna. You accept that?
Yeah.
So then, why you should have, if you've learnt the lesson, why you need these other things to, that these difficulties to remind you of the lesson. If this suffering is meant for to teach us a lesson, right, under Krishna's rule. If we've learnt the lesson and we're applying that, we've understood the lesson and we're following, then there's no need for more lessons. So Krishna reduces that karma. It's not necessary. You've understood. You're working back to Godhead. You don't need to. Maya doesn't have to push you back anymore with the triso. Adiatme kadi devi kadi buldi. She doesn't have to do that because you've learned the lesson. Okay, I'm going. When you're going back to Godhead, then she doesn't prod you. When you resist, then you get hurt because she's powerful. This triso, this trident. Adiatmik, Adidevik, Adivultik. She's saying, go back. Go, don't stay here. Prod, ow, ow, ow. Huh? In these three ways. And if you resist, no, I can enjoy, I can overcome, I can't. Then the more you resist, the more it hurts. Right? But if you're going ahead, then it doesn't hurt. So no need for that. So Krishna removes that. And I've heard that he doesn't remove the good karma, he lets you enjoy that. But he reduces the bad karma because there's no need, there's no point in giving it to the devotee. He's already understood, he's on his way. Did this answer the question? It's very late. You can ask me after. You can ask me now. Are we finished? Sambhogatam ki jai. Sambhogatam ki jai. Hago premanandi. Hari hari.